We're recording.
Okay, we're set. All right, for the record, it's November 25th, 2025, 9 o'clock a.m. in Phil Albert's hearing examiner for the City of Bainbridge Island. This morning, we're holding a hearing on a couple motions from Ms. Janow and Ms. Janow's SEPA appeal of Ordinance Number 2025-21. Mr. Teljan had two motions. One was for a motion for discovery, the other for summary judgment. So, before we jump into argument, is there any preliminary matters we need to address, or we can deal with scheduling after we're done with the oral, I think. So, okay.
Nothing from the city.
All right, Mr. Teljan, that's
So
your motion.
this is Mr. Mrs. Oh, sorry. Can you, am I coming through okay? Like everything's very choppy on my end, and I might not have good internet.
So far so good from my end. Mr. Soming, are you hearing okay?
Yeah, I can hear him correct.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to turn my All right. Sorry. It's weird on my end, so I'll just proceed and I'll rely on you to tell me if something's going wrong. So
So, oh, well, I guess something's going wrong.
yes, Ms. Janow had filed two motions that are for summary judgment first. The basic issue on summary judgment is that under Washington law, when a city or a county or an agency is going to do its SEPA review for a non-project action, specifically for some sort of zoning or code update, then Washington case law says that that city, county, or agency needs to look at the specific project level impacts of projects that are known to occur or that are planned to occur in the future. And we cited to, I think, the sort of most directly on point case is the Clark County versus GMHB case, where Clark County was going to adopt a surface mining overlay to allow mining in a particular area. And the city was actually in possession when it adopted that surface mining overlay or when it did SEPA review of very detailed plans for the mine that was going to go in or that was planned by the applicant to go in after that zoning change was adopted. And there, both the GMHB and the Washington Court of Appeals held that when there is a particular project that is known to occur following a non-project action, and when the sort of essential features of that project are known at the time of the non-project action, then the county had to actually review those impacts, make an attempt to do so in its environmental review of the non-project action, right? And that is what they held, and that is what we have here. If you look at Exhibit B to Ms. Janow's motion for discovery, which the overview of the facts and of the case in this case was, or in that motion, was incorporated into our motion for summary judgment, you will see in Exhibit B a preliminary plan set for the project that we're talking about here, the 625 Winslow Way housing project. And those plans are very specific. They have numbers of units, they have heights, they have renderings, they have parking, they show where the cars are going to come in and off of Winslow Way. The city is in possession of very detailed plans of what the 625 Winslow Way project is going to consist of. The essential attributes are known. And so our argument to you is that under Clark County versus GMHB, under the Lands Council case, under the case law that we cite in our motion, the county cannot do its DNS or do its environmental review of the code changes without also looking specifically at the impacts of this particular project. And what we see in this case is that the city did not do that. The SEPA checklist doesn't mention this project. To the question, do you have any other plans after this non-project action? The city says no, even though this project was the city's idea, and even though this project is being funded with $3 million of the city's own money. So in the SEPA checklist, we have nothing about this project. And then in the city's response to our motion for summary judgment, what they say is, well, we looked to the DEIS for the ongoing comprehensive plan amendment, and that's what we relied upon. And we figured that the DEIS looked at various alternatives. It found that there would be no significant adverse impacts, which is not actually true, but that's what they claim. And because we looked at the DEIS for the comprehensive plan, the DNS is okay. And my argument to you is that is a sort of wrong approach to the problem. You know, you have in Washington land use planning, right? You have like the sort of high-end broad plan level documents, and you have the high-end broad plan level EIS. Then you have project level environmental review, right? And under Washington law, if you're going to do a non-project action and there is a physical project waiting in the wings, you have to look at that particular project. You have to sort of look down to that project and evaluate its impacts. It doesn't help the city to say, well, we looked up to the sort of higher, broader level plan DEIS. What they were specifically required to do under Washington law is to look at the impacts of this project, not to the impacts of a sort of higher level planning document. And so my argument to you is they just violated Washington law by not looking at the impacts of the 625 project and not even, frankly, alleging or arguing to you that they in any way attempted to look at the particular impacts of this particular project for which they have very particular and detailed plans in their possession. And so I believe that my client should be awarded summary judgment and the DNS should be reversed and sent back to the city. I will stop there and ask if you want me to continue to discovery or if you want to hear from the city on this issue.
Well, I yeah, why don't you go on to discover since they're both pretty short arguments? I think we can do them all at once. Go ahead.
All right. So then my second argument is that, if we don't get summary judgment today, I think there is a real need for discovery in this case. We argued to you in our motion and also in our reply yesterday, we have a real need to know what exactly did the city evaluate when it did its DNS. Did it actually look? Is there any indication that it looked at the 625 project? They haven't alleged that, but if they did, we should be entitled to discover that. More, I think more of the point is the city has said, well, hey, we could not have looked to the environmental impacts of the 625 project because that is impossible at this stage. That is their words. They say it is simply impossible for them to have evaluated the impacts in any way of the 625 project. And I think we have a right to know if that is in fact true, which means we need to know, well, what exactly do they have in their possession relating to the 625 project? Do they have additional plans? Has there been additional communications where the details of that project have been pinned down? And if they're going to come in and say it's impossible for us to evaluate the impacts of that project, then I think it's only fair that we get discovery on what they know about that project so that we can try and rebut that defense and show no, it actually was possible. There actually is a whole lot about this project. The details have in fact been pinned down in reasonable degree to enable you to do this. And so and then in addition to knowing about the 625 project and how that may or may not have factored into their CEPA review, in their response they come in with a new theory that they relied upon the DEIS for the comprehensive plan update. And that is sort of a whole new issue. If you recall, we first learned about that issue when I emailed you on the motion to dismiss. I sent an email where I noted that there was another public records request to another person in the community where the city's public records custodian said, oh, the alternatives evaluated in this DNS were evaluated as part of alternative two to the DEIS. So that was the sort of the first inkling that we had that the city may have relied upon the DEIS for its analysis of this particular ordinance. But now the city's brief is all about the DEIS, that they reviewed it, that they evaluated, that they conducted some form of analysis relating the alternatives and the analysis and the DEIS to this particular ordinance. And I think we should have a right to discover how exactly that occurred. What exactly did their environmental review consist of? How did they relate the DEIS for the comprehensive plan to this particular ordinance? That is a new issue, and we would like discovery basically into how they conducted their DNS environmental review. I will say, in addition to asking for a discovery, which I think is needed in this case, in my omnibus reply, I also said that we would like to amend our appeal to add three new claims relating specifically to the city's sort of new revelation that it relied upon the DEIS. And those are that the city did not properly incorporate the DEIS by reference in their response to us. They say, oh, well, we incorporated the DEIS by reference. And we did that by saying in the DNS, we relied upon other documents in our possession. And our argument is, well, that's not incorporation by reference. To incorporate by reference, you have to make a reference to the DEIS to put people on notice, in part so they know how to draft their appeals. And so we'd like to challenge the fact that they didn't incorporate it properly by reference. We would also like to make a claim that they are now implementing a portion of their comprehensive plan through this ordinance or their comprehensive plan update before finishing the final FEIS for the comprehensive plan update in violation of WAC 197 11070. And we'd also like to include a claim that their reliance on the DEIS is clearly erroneous and not supported by substantial evidence. Again, the city's response to my motions was really the first time that the city fleshed out its argument that it relied upon the DEIS. There was no notice of that prior, and we'd like to add these claims. So in all, I do believe that under Washington law, summary judgment is warranted in this case because the city made no effort and does not even allege that it made an effort to look at the specific impacts of the 625 Winslow Way project. I believe that discovery is needed in this case because we need to know exactly what the city knows about the 625 project, and we need to know what actually transpired in the city's environmental review, both relating to the 625 project and relating to its reliance on the DEIS. And we would like to add three new claims, one challenging their lack of incorporation by reference, one challenging their implementation of the DEIS alternatives before the FEIS has been completed, and one challenging just the reliance on their DEIS is not supported by substantial evidence and being clearly erroneous.
Okay, just a few questions for you. On the Clark County case, dealing with the surface mining overlay zone, I mean, was that did that zone encompass more than the project specific area, or was this kind of a rezone that basically went hand in hand with the project and only affected that one project site?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you for that. That is, I believe, a distinction. I think it was only for that one for that one project, right? And so in this case, it is true that the ordinance covers more property than this particular parcel, but nevertheless, this ordinance is intended to facilitate this particular project, right? I mean, if you're rezoning four properties and you know that one of those properties is going to have a very particular project, and you're doing the ordinance for that project, then I think that same rule applies. And we presented you, I think, more than substantial evidence. I mean, very compelling evidence that this project is indeed what this ordinance is planned to facilitate. The city has said it multiple times to the voice of the planning commissioners. The city conceived of this project. The city sent out an RFQ for this project. The city is putting $3 million into this project. Everybody knows that even if this ordinance might cover other properties, for this property, this ordinance is intended to facilitate this particular project.
So what level of information do you have on the project so far in terms of, I mean, do you know about roughly how many dwelling units are going to be involved? And obviously,
92. Yeah,
okay.
92. So let me just share my screen if I can. Let's see
Sure.
here. Here we go. So this is Exhibit B to appellant's motion for discovery, and this was the preliminary master development plan set that was submitted by the applicant. I believe it was July 15th of this year, and it was actually when the applicant submitted this plan set. And you can see here they actually have two deviation requests. They have one for floor area ratio and one for building height because they came to the planning commission and said, "Hey, here's what we're going to build." But we need these two deviation requests. We need these two deviations from the code in order to actually construct it. Well, it's those deviation requests to which the ordinance is responding, right? So as the planning commission received this plan set and then began work on this particular ordinance to change the code to facilitate this particular project. If you go down, we have project rendering. So at least, for thinking about aesthetic impacts, those sorts of things, the principal features of the project are in fact known. And then if you go down, we start having what I would consider fairly detailed plans. We have here, this is the parking plan for the first floor, showing the cars coming in and out of Winslow Way. Then we have the floor plans with the individual units and so forth. So yes, I think we know quite a bit about this project, and we have pretty detailed plans. I would also note, although I didn't put it in my motion, there has in fact been a traffic study done for this project that is not listed on the city's website on their project webpage for this particular project. But there has in fact been a traffic study for this particular project done. That traffic study was done before the applicant did submitted these plans, and before there was actually a sort of site plan and floor plans, et cetera. It was also done before some pretty major changes were done to the sort of circulation pattern through the intersection of SR 305 and Winslow Way. The county sort of rejiggered that intersection, which is one of the things that we're concerned about. But there are units, so you can say you can run a trip generation analysis and say, okay, with the mix of uses, how much traffic is going to be generated here? You can do a lot to figure out what the impacts of this project are likely to be. And I would say that SEPA, the reason why those cases, the Clark County case, held that you had if you have sort of particular plans for a particular project, you have to evaluate those at the non-project stage. The reason why is because SEPA says you have to do your environmental review at the earliest possible stage. Right. So if you are contemplating taking an action at the non-project level to facilitate a particular project, and you have particular plans for that project, in that case, they were labeled as hypothetical mine plans. Right. So it's sort of the same here. These are preliminary. In Clark County, they were labeled as hypothetical, right? But they were still very detailed, and the court held that you have to make an effort to actually look at the impacts of that project before you take a non-project action to facilitate it.
Well, I mean, the reason why I asked you what information you already have is I'm trying to figure out why you need more information. It looks like you already have pretty detailed information, assuming that this is current, and I think it'd be fair to, get that verified with the discovery request. But I mean, do you need anything more than this if this information is current, this and
Oh,
the
fair. I
transportation
see.
report?
Yeah, I see. Well, one is I was actually looking last night on the city's website for this particular project. It lists updated plans dated August of 2025, which post-date the plans that I just showed you.
Okay.
It lists them, but there is no link, right? So I don't know exactly what it's referring to. So there may be other, and I would also note that the traffic study that I just referenced to you, that is not posted on the city's website. So it is in fact true, I think, that there could be other concrete reports, plans, or studies as part of the 625 project that are not actually publicly available. I also think that a lot of the details, a lot of the discussion could have occurred in communications, right, between city officials and representatives of Lehigh. So, I do think there is a need to get more information about this project to try and press the point that it is not, in fact, impossible for the city to make any sort of forecast of what the impacts of this particular project would be.
Okay, so you referenced some communications with the Lehigh representative. So it sounds like, because my next question was going to be beyond just the updated reports and project drawings, do you need anything else? And I mean, do you see that these email communications would really add much benefit? Because those communications are probably, on the speculative side, I would think, given the
Well,
fact that email discovery requests are very time intensive, I feel like I have to be somewhat stingy on that side.
fair enough. But I don't think that we can say what's in them without seeing them. And the city has made this point to say that it would take, well, I think I'm not sure how they arrived at this figure, but they said there could be 50,000 documents that we're looking for, and it could take them 2 years to respond. I don't know how they actually arrived at those particular figures. However, I think a reasonable way to proceed is, I mean, I don't think that what we want is just speculative back and forth about the 625 project, right? I don't think that we want, right, just general give and take. I'm not here to you to say let's enter a discovery order that's going to take the city 2 years to complete. I think the city knows what level of detail I'm looking for. I think we all understand what I'm looking for. And so if the city can come back and say, here are the categories, here are the buckets, right? Here are the documents that we think are responsive, to make a good faith effort to show us and give us anything that might show that where details of this project are being discussed, where decisions are being made, that sort of thing, right? Then we can have that discussion. But I don't think we can say, well, just because every single solitary conceivable email that might have gone back and forth between the city and Lehigh would take the city an exorbitant amount of time to give us, that doesn't, I don't think, detract from the point that if there are, in fact, communications where decisions are made, where details have been discussed, that we should be able to get those. And so I would propose that the city, be given a short amount of time to come back to us and say, of these, all these documents that are potentially responsive, right? Here's the buckets that they fall into. There are sort of funding communications, which we're not necessarily interested in, right? There are discussions about other, ancillary topics. But if there are communications that talk about real details and real decisions being made, I think that we should get those.
Okay. And so what, I mean, what level of detail for the CEPA review are we talking about here for the project? Because I guess the concern would be that at this point, it looks like the developer has put together some project details that I mean, it could say this is all we're submitting, and then a permitting decision would be based on that. But the fact of the matter is they haven't said they're at the final stage. They could still make revisions, a lot of revisions to it. So, I mean, are we in a position where we're going to be looking at some draft design drawings and doing a full scope environmental review only to find out that they still planned on making changes to it? How does that factor into, what level of detail we should be doing here?
Right. So 2 points. One point is that is also the situation that occurred in the Clark County case, right? The mine plans were labeled as hypothetical mine plans, and there had not been an application for the mine submitted, right? So that is the case there too, that those plans could theoretically be changed to some degree, right? But the court still said, hey, but if you have plans, right, and if the principal fe the principal features of the project can be known, then you have to actually make some effort, and you have to look at what those impacts are going to be. And so I'm just reporting to you what the Washington Supreme Court has held. I get it that it could be changed, but the point is they still have to make some effort right now to actually review those and say what those impacts will be. And to the point that I guess my other point would be, you are in fact right, and that's why I'm asking for summary judgment. Right, because whatever that level of detail, whatever that level of review entails, it has to be focused on looking at the plans that the city has in hand and asking what those impacts could be. And that is something that, whatever the level of review would entail, it is something the city didn't do in this case. Right, so it is true that I believe we should get summary judgment based on the fact that they just did nothing. Right. If we are going to move beyond summary judgment and go to a hearing, and we're going to be contesting what level of review was appropriate, given what level of certainty or uncertainty or detail or undetail was actually presented to the city, then I should be entitled to discovery to figure out what exactly they're holding and what exactly they have regarding this project. So again, the answer is twofold. I get the question, but they didn't do anything here. That's why we should get summary judgment. If we don't get summary judgment and we have to go to a hearing and address all these details in sort of in their minutiae and in their full sophistication, then we should be allowed to understand and know exactly what the city has on this project.
Okay. Then final question. I wonder how we get past material question of fact here, because it's kind of, I mean, I would agree, a little bit of unfair surprise on the appellant side. The city comes back and says, well, it's all in the DIS documents without identifying specifically where that information is. So, unless I were to read through the DIS and try to find out where it is myself at this point, I don't know what level of detail the DIS addresses. So how could I say there's no material question of fact here at this point?
2 points on that. One point, I think, sort of schematically or systematically, right? You have, I'm going to turn on my, just because I'm going to gesture to you. So, right, when you have high level plan level environmental review, right? So you have the comprehensive plan. Then you have environmental review of development regulations, right? That's what this one is right now. We're doing an environmental review of an ordinance that's changing sort of the development regulations. Then you have project level review, right? And you have to do environmental review at each of these stages, right? I mean, you might truncate it, or you might do certain things, but you have three levels of review. What the Clark County case is telling you is that when you have a plan or an ordinance level change, and there's a project waiting in the wings, then you have to look down at the impacts of that project. And what the city is telling you is that, well, we didn't do that. Instead, what we did is we looked up to this level of DEIS. Well, that doesn't solve the problem, right? Because under the code, you're supposed to be looking down at the project, not up at the plan. So sort of like schematically or systematically, they're looking in the wrong location. They're looking in the wrong direction, right? Up instead of down, right? More to the point, I guess more particularly, like suppose you know they could theoretically look up to the DEIS. Well, if I file a motion for summary judgment, and my motion for summary judgment says, "Hey, this project, this ordinance is intended to facilitate a very particular project, and you didn't look at that project," and then they say, "Oh, we looked at the DEIS, we looked at the comprehensive plan."
Okay. Nope, we lost you. You're frozen. Mr. Stoneman is Mr. Television frozen on your side?
Yes, he's frozen on my side.
Oh. Guess maybe Mr. Television, you'll have to turn off
Fact,
your video.
right?
I mean, I'm seeing like 12 Brian Tulligan.
Yeah, that's also very strange.
Have put forward a prima facie late. They need to. I'll turn off my thing again. So my point is, they instead of looking up, they look down. I mean, sorry, instead of looking at the project, that they looked up to the DEIS. But the point is, I filed a motion saying they failed to look at the impacts of this project. That states a prima facie case for summary judgment. They've come back to try and create a material issue of fact by pointing to the DEIS for the plan. The burden is on them to say, where exactly did we look, and how exactly does our review of the DEIS for the plan substitute or compensate for a lack of environmental review of the project itself? And they haven't done that. They've said generally, we looked up at the DEIS. They have not pointed out to you, they have not articulated to you how that is an adequate substitute or where in the DEIS they looked for the particular impacts of this project. So, to the extent that there is a latent issue of material fact, that was for the count, that was for the city to identify and articulate, and they didn't do that.
Is that kind of the SEPA law though? Because of course the SEPA hearing, it's a de novo hearing, and it is pretty standard practice for cities and counties to bring up new information that they didn't even consider at the threshold level to justify their determination that there are no probable significant adverse impacts. And I can't remember. I know there's at least one case, Citation Brown versus somebody that said that harmless error as long as the impacts were finally addressed at some point, even if it was at the SEPA hearing, that's good enough. So I mean, if that is the law, that the city of course still has an opportunity to fill in some missing gaps during the hearing to show there's no impact. Again, how can I say there's no material question of fact given that all the evidence hasn't even come in yet on that issue?
You're right. There is case law that talks about, if the city didn't, if the city's assessment or the city, in an open record hearing, the city can bring in new evidence, the parties can bring in new evidence, and you sort of have to judge the case based on that, sort of totality. I agree with you on that. But that was also the case in Clark County, right? So the applicants challenged the county's environmental review to the GMHB. At the GMHB, there's also an open record hearing. Right. They did that. And what the GMHB said and what the Court of Appeals said is that you have to have some, you still have to look at the checklist and see if you, if this, if the county or the city has any, can show prima facie compliance with SEPA by showing in their checklist they actually did this thing. They actually tried to look at the impacts of this project. So my answer to you is once the city has shown, for example, that it has established prima facie compliance with SEPA, that they did actually try, they did actually go and try and look at the impacts of this project. They did a prima facie or sort of at its core, they tried to do the thing that they were supposed to do. Then, yeah, we can go to an open record hearing and we can have facts and evidence and witnesses and try and flesh out exactly what that looked for. But this is a more basic question of whether they did it at all. Right. And my argument is that under Clark County, both at the GMHB level and at the Court of Appeals level, both of those entities, the GMHB and the Court of Appeals, emphasized that the city needs to demonstrate this in their checklist. Right. They need to show they actually tried to look at this in their checklist. And here, what we see in the checklist is there I won't pull up my screen again unless you want like me to show you, but there is a specific question right at the beginning that says, do you have any other plans in relation to what you're proposing here? And the city said, no. No, we do not. The answer to that question should have been yes, we do. It is the 625 project. And then there should be some evidence in the checklist that they actually tried to look at the impacts of that project. And what we have here is the exact opposite, where the checklist says, nope, we don't have any other plans relating to this action, even though they're the ones who conceived of this project. They're the ones who are partially funding this project. It has been the city's idea to put this project here. And yet the checklist says, we have no further plans in relation to this ordinance. So because they haven't even met that threshold level of showing prima facie compliance with SEPA, yes, I believe summary judgment is warranted, specifically under the Clark County case, but also there's the Lands Council case, other cases like this where the Court of Appeals has said, right, if you're doing a non-project action and there's a project action waiting in the wings, you have to look at the impacts of that project action.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Mr. Telgen. All right,
Thank you.
Mr. Salming, let's move on to you.
Okay. All right. Well, good morning, everybody. I'll start off by kind of a bit of a caveat. I have to say, regrettably, I feel a little underprepared for today's oral arguments. I'm not sure about you, Mr. Ulrichs. I received Mr. Telligan's reply at 10:58 in the morning yesterday, giving us a little less than 24 hours to review this and prepare. In addition, I find it regrettable that Mr. Telligan continues to send kind of pseudo replies via email, so kind of a piecemeal version. So, to the extent that I'm not prepared today, I ask Mr. Olbrechts that if you have any further questions for me, to go ahead and give me leave to respond later. I
Wait,
do
hold on. I
recognize.
made no pseudo replies by emails on this. I submitted my reply. I did nothing further.
Okay. Yeah, I'll let the emails stand for themselves. I understood. Yeah. It's I know we're dealing with limited time here, so understood. Go ahead,
Yes.
Mr.
Yeah,
Sullivan.
and I recognize the case schedule was a little unclear, but I just want to recognize that to the extent that I may not be able to answer your questions, Mr. Olbrechts, you give me time perhaps later to submit my answers.
Okay. All right.
But so let's not dwell on the past. Let's move to the merits of the appeal here. So the appellant has filed two motions in this particular matter. They do tack on, I think, a motion to add further grounds for appeal, which I'll kind of address quickly at the end. But I'd like to spend the majority of my time on the motions for summary judgment, as well as the motions to allow discovery. As to the motion for summary judgment, essentially four main points I'd like to make here, and I'll make them in turn. First is that the city did consider sufficient documentation and environmental analysis before issuing the DNS. As outlined in the brief, authorities such as Brown versus City of Tacoma, RCW 4321C034, 4321C034 specifically provides the proposal. Prior proposal or action and the new proposal or action need not be identical, but must have similar elements that provide a basis for comparing the environmental consequences. So in this particular matter, as made abundantly clear in the city's briefing, as well as Mr. Telligan's arguments, the city did rely upon the environmental analysis that was conducted in the Winslow Subarea Plan, DEIS, specifically alternative number two. Alternative number two of the DEIS analyzes increasing a maximum FAR from 1.5 to 2.5, increasing the building height from 45 feet to an astonishing 55 feet for the Central Core District, as well as increasing the maximum FAR from 1.4 to 3 and the maximum building from 45 to 65 feet now in the Ferry Terminal District. It's important to note that these are all more intense development regulations. And they apply to a larger area than the area that's targeted by the ordinance, and it applies to all developments, not necessarily just 100% affordable housing. Armed with this kind of existing environmental analysis, that is what the city used to come to its DNS. Point number two is that the city properly determined the ordinance would not have a significant adverse effect on the environment. Now, of course, it's axiomatic that an EIS is required if, based on the totality of the circumstances, future development is probable following the action, and if that development will have a significant adverse impact upon the environment. Sorry, effect upon the environment. Now, to determine if there were, in fact, potential environmental impacts, SEPA requires first step is, establish your baseline, which is the condition of the existing environment. In other words, what do current development regulations permit? For example, in the Sammamish Valley case, as cited multiple times by the appellant in her briefing, the court used the existing baseline of the agricultural zoning, not necessarily the number of unlawful number of wineries and breweries existing in the area, not necessarily the condition as it is, but what is permitted under these development regulations. So with that in mind, the existing conditions, when you compare it to what is currently permitted, are only represent a very incremental increase in development regulations. This is again an increase of only 10 feet of building height. That is roughly one story. We're talking about adding one story to potentially 100% affordable housing projects. The ordinance would only increase the FAR from 1.5 to 2.5, an exceptionally minor difference, which will again not have a significant adverse impact on the environment. And again, the ordinance will only affect 100% affordable housing. When you couple that together with the fact that this small area of the city that's targeted by the ordinance is essentially completely developed, with exception of one larger parcel, the obvious it's I don't think it takes, quite frankly, a rocket scientist to determine that there is not going to be a probable adverse impact to the environment here. And finally, and most telling, I think if you look at the appellant's briefing and you listen carefully to the arguments they advance, they don't really articulate any credible argument that these proposed changes will actually have an ad significant adverse impact upon the environment. Instead, the appellant attacks mostly from procedural standpoints. I just don't see a credible argument that this delta, if you will actually have a significant adverse effect upon the environment. Point number three is the city considered potential development resulting from the ordinance. Now, again, returning to Sammamish Valley mandates that a lead agency must consider the likely environmental impact if all the land located in the area is put to maximum use under the regulation. So, again, we're looking at a baseline of what does the current development regulations permit. And then we look at what do the proposed regulations permit, and then you look at the potential effect that change, that delta. And of course, as pointed out by Mr. Talligan, where specific future development projects are anticipated at the time of a non-project action, the impacts of those projects must be evaluated at the level of specificity possible at that time. Here again, alternative two of the DEIS for the Winslow subarea plan does all the environmental work necessary here too, right? And alternative two, examine the developmental regulations with greater impact, the proposed ordinance in a bigger area, and for all developments, not just affordable housing. And it's more importantly, the city couldn't really have anticipated the impacts of the 625 project any more than it could have. And this is kind of a point that I wanted to dive deep and was kind of illustrated in your line of questioning to Mr. Telligan about the plans for the 625 project. Yes, there have been plans presented to the city for this project, but nothing is set in stone. There is no project permit application whatsoever. The project or the potential project, as far as I know, is not fully funded. There is nothing to requ that requires a this 65 project to, first of all, even be proposed. This project could die on the vine, proverbially. Two, this project could very well vary from what the plans shown to you today Could be. I mean, it could be 20 feet tall. It could be 45 feet tall. It could be 65 feet tall. It could be 92 units. It could be 85 units. We quite frankly just don't know, which is why in a non-project-based SEPA, which is before you receive do a project-based SEPA, we look at the potential effects of the development regulations if they were completely maxed out, and that's what we have done here. And finally, there is that line of case law that says that to the extent there's any sort of alleged procedural errors, quite frankly, the courts do what's I would call a harmless error analysis. I don't think they use necessarily that term, harmless in there, error analysis, but there is that line of case law that says, to the extent that that the lead agencies have conducted adequate analysis, we'll call it good enough, if you will. In this particular case, the WACs require lead agency analysis to do environmental, sorry, lead agency to do environmental analysis. And that's what we did here. The city relied upon the analysis in the DEIS alternative number two, which again analyzed more intense development regulations over a larger area for limited type of development. And again, I think that the courts have again said that the rule of reason and where errors are of no consequence, it should not, the appeal should not necessarily be entertained in that sense. In this particular case, I don't hear any particular argument that as to why any sort of potential error was not harmless. First, to the extent that the city perhaps did not incorporate the DEIS by specific reference, has again no bearing on the merits of the environmental analysis that was relied upon here. It has nothing to do with the potential impacts, the traffic, noise, water quality, or air quality. Incorporation by reference is a procedural issue. Second, the public and the appellant have been made painfully aware of the DEIS. They've had access to the DEIS for months. And finally, and perhaps most fatal to the appellant's point, is the fact that I don't think that the appellant can credibly claim specific harm here. If you kind of step back and think about what is the purpose of requiring public agencies to specifically incorporate environmental analysis in the DINS. It is, in my opinion, to enable comment during the SEPA comment period and to allow for appeal. But in this particular case, the appellant already admitted that she did not know about the DINS comment period. So, to the extent that she could claim that perhaps, well, if the incorporation by reference was there, I could have made a more specific comment. I think that is severely undercut, logically speaking. And then number two, obviously, Ms. Jana has been able to lodge an appeal. She has hired very competent counsel who has brought multiple motions, and I don't see any particular harm in that sense. So now moving to the motion to allow discovery. So first, the hearing examiner shouldn't allow discovery because no extraordinary hearing ex circumstances exist. So hearing examiner rule 2.4.5 applies here. And the first threshold or the first kind of hurdle that the appellant needs to overcome is a demonstration of extraordinary circumstances. And of course, as mentioned in both sides' briefing, there is no definition of what extraordinary circumstances means in the hearing examiner rules. But it seems to me, I think parties are on the same wavelength, if you will, and say that is generally understood to be a highly unusual set of facts, not commonly associated with a particular thing or event. Similar circumstances in CR60 case law is, unexpected events such as unexpected changes of law or incapacity of legal counsel due to mental health issues. So when you kind of take those examples to mind, and you truly examine the circumstances of this case, there's really no extraordinary circumstances present in this matter. The appellant identifies its extraordinary circumstance that the city has endeavored to hide its true purpose of the DNS ordinance. And not only is that patently false, the city has been more than transparent here, but more importantly, there's really no evidence to support that any sort of sinister motive or attempt to hide is present here. Appellant claims that it's also irregular for the city to allegedly disclaim any responsibility to conduct environmental analysis, but that is again false. The city did do that work. It's in the Winslow Subarea Plan DAS, which is the appellant was well aware of. So moving on to the next hurdle. So even if the appellant is able to demonstrate extraordinary circumstances, the city's position is that the scope of discovery as requested by the appellant should be severely limited. And the first reason I kind of want to address is perhaps not directly outlined in Rule of Procedure 2.4.5, but this general legal concept that discovery should be limited to what is relevant, right? Because although admittedly the rules of evidence are very relaxed in these types of proceedings, relevance, the rule against irrelevant evidence is there for a reason. It is there to protect from frolic and deviation. It is there to protect from undue delay. It is there to protect from confusion of issues. And in this particular case, the city would submit that anything with respect to the 65 project is quite frankly irrelevant. This is again a non-project-based SEPA. The question here is, does the analysis here should be focused solely on the DNS, which is challenged here, the ordinance, which the DNS was issued for, and the existing development regulations, not about a hypothetical project that may or may not ever come to fruition. So that I think that is highly irrelevant, and I'll explain in a little bit why that would also create a massive delay of these proceedings. Now moving back to Rule of Procedure 2.4.5, the rule establishes essentially four kind of factors for the hearing examiner to consider when determining the scope. If I remember correctly, this is essentially a lift from the state's APA about discovery. The city's position is that scope should be severely limited because of the specifically two of those factors, and what is undue expense and delay. So it will take, quite frankly, an exceptional amount of time to provide the appellant with her wish list. The appellant's request is not only for requests for production, but highly unusually interrogatories as well, which will only take time to find those documents and produce those documents, review for privilege, produce those documents with a withholding log, but also review those documents and respond to interrogatories. In furtherance of her appeal, the appellant has submitted many PRA requests to obtain what she believes to be necessary for her appeal. And I think it's important to kind of note that, because while the records that were requested in her appeal aren't exactly line up with the scope of what she's asking for in her discovery, the Venn diagram doesn't completely overlap. They overlap by a vast majority. So I think any sort of timetables and projected amount of records that the city has put together in response to the PRA requests is certainly very probative to how long it will take the city to respond to a discovery request. So, according to the city's public records officer, who's been doing this for quite some time, it will take roughly 2 years to completely fulfill the PRA requests. This is in part because the city, it just by the sheer amount, quite frankly, of the amount of records that the city has already found. The city's already found 14,215 emails that are responsive to just one request. And based on other requests and other for other previous PRA requests, the city has logically inferred that it could be potentially up to 50,000 emails alone. This is just emails, Mr. Examiner. This is not memos. This is not plan sets. These are not drafts. Records covers a whole manner of sins, quite frankly. So this could be an immense amount of time. Now, the appellant, I think to a certain degree, recognizes that the scope of the request as written is, quite frankly, very massive. And in furtherance to in response to that concern, the appellant has kind of argued, first of all, well, maybe we could just provide a list of documents by category and a list of emails. But this too will take an exceptional amount of time. The city has to run its email searches. It needs to review each email to determine if it is in fact responsive to the request, then input that data into an Excel spreadsheet. Then send it to Mr. Telligan, send it to you, Mr. Olbrechts, who will be then acting perhaps as a discovery master to be telling the city what it should or should not be producing. And I think this point was perhaps kind of highlighted, Mr. Olbrechts, in your question and response to Mr. Telligan and his response, where essentially Mr. Telligan says, well, the city knows what we're asking for. They know. Unfortunately, we are not mind readers. And then he says, well, anything that has real substantive analysis really, or substantive decision making. But again, that is a highly a subjective standard. And, should discovery be ordered, which again, the city opposes, the city, of course, would be willing to comply, but we need firm, definitive guidance to ensure that we are complying with that order. The other specific factor that the city believes is relying upon to ask for a more limited scope of discovery is orderly and prompt conduct. I think if the hearing examiner sits back and reflects on the sheer amount of volume already exchanged in this particular appeal, the number of emails, the number of pleadings, the number of declarations, it's become abundantly clear that should this project evolve into a conversation about the 625 project, again, something that may never come to fruition, something that could be very different by the time if it ever is applied for. And it will cause a massive amount of confusion, as well as delay of a hearing that should be relatively limited. One thing, though, that Mr. Telligan also hit on that I'd like to kind of touch on is that this concept that without discovery, they are hamstrung, that they have no idea how. The city conducted its environmental analysis. The DIS is over 600 pages long. How are they truly supposed to know that they need these interrogatories? But as pointed by out by you, Mr. Olbrechts, the fact of the matter still remains that it is going to be the city's burden, provided we get to a hearing on the merits, to prove that its DNS was valid. And in doing so, the city would need to, one, produce all the records that it is believes to be necessary to prove its case with to meet that burden. And I think within those documents, the appellant will be given access to those records. And to the extent that the city doesn't, I think Mr. Telligan is going to rightfully so really hit that the city did not meet its burden. Mr. Telligan can kind of sit back, if you will, and say, look, the city didn't meet its burden. I don't have to prove a dang thing. And that is true. So I think that about covers it. Again, Mr. Olbrechts, I would ask that with respect to Mr. Telligan's request to add claims, I don't believe that is properly raised as it is untimely, as well as the fact is raised in a reply in support of a motion. I ask that the parties, if Mr. Olbrechts, you are inclined to allow, consider adding those claims that we perhaps brief those issues. I think it certainly merits some sort of further analysis whether or not it has been properly brought. Obviously, the city's been caught flat-footed here. We can't provide a reply to reply addressing these potential claims that were the reply being sent to us less than 24 hours ago. So, to the extent that Mr. Olbrechts are going to weigh on this, I'd be asked to be given more time on that.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Selvin. Not bad for being allegedly unprepared, but sounds
Well,
like you're pretty well prepared.
it's I prefer to have at least 6 hours of sleep, Mr. Olbrechts. I
Oh,
had far
okay.
less than that last night.
Well, thank God it's the holidays. We'll get a couple days off, hopefully, at the end of the week. So, all right, Mr. Tellington, any response?
First of all, I asked to submit my response yesterday on the 24th. I thought that was granted. I'd made that request several times, and my recollection is that was granted for the 24th. So I'm not sure why Mr. Soming only got 6 hours of sleep. It also wasn't that complicated of a response. I guess, Mr. Soming says, first of all, the 625 project is irrelevant. I think that's proof positive that we should get summary judgment. I'm going to share my screen once more and just show you the language in the Clark County case, which Mr. Soming did not discuss. I'm not sure why he doesn't discuss it, but this is from the Clark County case that I was citing to you, and I have here highlighted. It says, where a future project is known, SEPA requires the agency to address the likely environmental impacts the project would cause and requires it to be addressed at the earliest possible time. At the time the county adopted the ordinance, the principal features of the SMO designation allowed the site to be mined and its environmental impacts could be reasonably identified. And an EIS would have made an important contribution to the decision. So, I mean, the Court of Appeals has held when you do a non-project action, the purpose of which is to facilitate a particular project, and the principal features of that project are known, you have to look at the impacts of that project when you're doing your non-project CEPA review. That's just the law of the land. That's just the law of the land. And the city is telling you right now to your question about, well, is there a material issue of fact? The city just told you there is not. Because in the city's opinion, the 625 project is, quote, irrelevant. So it's telling you it didn't look at all. It didn't do one iota of a thing to look at the actual impacts of this particular project that is contrary to Washington law. I will also note on my screen here, if I can find it. Let me see here. Here is the development agreement that the city entered with the developer in this case. I cited it in my response. In terms of, well, what do we actually know about this project? Well, it says here the project shall contain approximately 90 multifamily dwelling units, right? They know because they signed a contract, a development agreement with the developer saying, here's what we want. We want approximately 90 multifamily dwelling units. So they know, and it's true, conceivably, this project could wither and die on the vine. That is why the city wants this case to occur at lightning speed. This is why one of the very first emails that Mr. Soming sent in this case to you was saying, we have to get this done lickety-split because there are developers who are going to be impacted if this gets delayed. So the city wants this to move fast so that it can make this project a reality. Maybe it will wither and die, but it is the city's goal, the city's objective, the city's plan to enable this particular project with this ordinance. And under Washington law, when they do their environmental review of the ordinance, they have to look at the impacts of this project. And now, whatever that may entail, whether they know enough to do a highly detailed review or just a lower level review, whatever it is, they have to try. And the city just told you they didn't. Because in the city's opinion, that project is, quote, irrelevant. Well, I would ask you to award us summary judgment because they just gave you the reason. They just said there is no material issue of fact. We believe, as a matter of law, the 625 project is completely irrelevant to our environmental review of the ordinance. That is dead wrong under Washington law. Regarding discovery, I think there are extraordinary circumstances here. I think it is extraordinary, and it is unusual for a city to pass an ordinance specifically to enable a particular project and then claim that project has nothing to do with what they're doing, and to claim that I should have no recourse to understand what exactly they know about the project. Now, I would say I appreciate it, and I would like it noted for the record that maybe this conversation should be changed by Mr. Soming's admission just now that at the hearing, if there is a hearing in this case, he will have the burden of proof. He will have the burden of proof to establish that the DNS is valid and legal and supported by sufficient information. That is his burden by his admission just now. Nevertheless, when he tries to make his case, when he tries to meet his burden, and he tries to say there is no possible way that we could evaluate the impacts of the 625 project, the burden of persuasion may shift to me. And I may have to come to you and say, here's what we know. Here's what the city did. Here's how the city evaluated it. Here are the details of what the city actually did and what the city actually looked at. In order to meet my burden of persuasion, once that shifts to me to try and show to you to rebut his claim that it's absolutely impossible to evaluate the impacts of this project, I need to have something to show to you. And in order to do that, I need discovery into what they actually looked at. Now, granted, our discovery requests are broad because we don't know exactly what we're looking for, right? And his response is we shouldn't give them anything. I think this requires a more tailored approach. I think the city can come to you and say, here are the emails that bear upon what this project will look like. Here are the documents that have evaluated it. Here are the plans that depict it. Here are the studies and reports that we have received. And here are the documents that illustrate exactly what we did. Now, it may take a bit of time. I don't think a long time. I think, we could get a list from Mr. Soming and we could discuss it, but we should get some discovery as to what exactly was submitted by the 625 project, because again, by Mr. Soming's admission, he believes the 625 project is irrelevant, which indicates to me he plans to put no evidence into the record about that project. I may then have to come to you and show what the city actually did, and I need to have something to show you. So I need discovery into what the city actually looked at. I will show you one more thing here. I have the DEIS open somewhere on my screen. Here's why it matters. He makes a big point about saying, well, actually, I'll show you two things. One thing is he says, hey, we're only increasing, it's not a big deal. How could it possibly have significant adverse impacts? Well, one of the things we're concerned about is traffic. If you recall, the declaration of Don Jano talked about traffic at the intersection of 305 and Winslow Way. You can figure out how many cars a project is going to generate by the number of units and by the uses. There are like full manuals for this, right? Where you can get an approximation of how many cars are going to be added. Well, you're looking at a page of the DEIS, not the final, but the draft that the city is relying upon. And it talks about intersections along 305 and talks about how, well, hey, WashDOT has a need study. They're going to kind of evaluate those impacts, but then look at this sentence. It says here, the city will support the strategies that WashDOT identifies. However, the SR 305 intersection.
Oh, Mr. Telgen, we lost you there. Mr. Selvin, can you hear him?
I cannot.
Yeah. So, Mr. Telgen, just so we know, we can't hear you anymore. Give him a chance to try to get back in, maybe log out and back in again. And Mr. Chalgen, you can maybe chat with us to kind of tell us what you're doing to try to get back in. Yeah, where's the chat function on this? I just can't seem to find it on my screen.
I don't think it's been enabled for this.
Oh, I see. Hearing. Okay, that's why. Oh, okay, gotcha. All right, well, forget the chat option then. So,
I think because this is a webinar, not a meeting.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Yeah. So,
is Mr. Telligan available at the other Brian Telligan's here?
Yeah, I
don't know.
I have six, yeah, at least six screens with his name
I was just wondering if he might be able to pop onto one of those.
Hi, yeah. This is Abby McSini, an associate with Brian Telligen. He is trying to reconnect at the moment. He'll be back
okay.
in a second.
Okay, all right. We'll be in a few minutes.
Sorry. Can you hear me now, Mr.
Oh,
Examiner?
now we can hear you. Yes. Okay. Welcome back.
I apologize for that. What I was showing you, I don't think I'm going to try and pull up my screen. Did you see where I pulled up the part of the DEIS?
No, didn't get that far.
Okay. So I'm not sure where exactly you lost me. But I was going to point out to you, did you see where I talked about the development agreement where the city agreed
Yes,
to
you did
90
pull up
plus
the
units?
development
Okay.
agreement. Yeah.
Okay. The next thing I was going to pull up is that Mr. Soeming, talks about how they just relied upon the DEIS. Well, if you look at the DEIS, just give me one second here. If you look at this sentence, the DEIS says for intersections along the 305 corridor that the alternative two may still have a significant unavoidable adverse impact depending on what projects are ultimately constructed. That's what the DEIS says. It says that for those intersections along 305, depending on the project that is ultimately constructed, there may be significant adverse impacts. And if you recall, one of the things that we're concerned about is traffic impacts at the intersection of 305 and Winslow Way, which is right by this project. So we
Shoot, we lost you again, Mr. Telgen.
Gosh darn it.
Oh, there you
All right.
are. Continue now. Okay.
Yeah. So the point is, they know what this project is because they have a contract saying what this project has to be. Maybe it will die on the vine because it won't get funding, but they're trying to make it a reality. That project is absolutely relevant under Washington law. They're supposed to look at those impacts. And then they say instead they looked at the DEIS, but the DEIS says projects constructed may ultimately have significant adverse impacts on 305 intersections. And that's one of the things that we're concerned about. So I'm not sure how much you missed, but the point is, I need to be able to present evidence at this hearing. I need discovery to know what exactly the city evaluated, what they know about this project. But I will say, first of all, yes, we should be entitled, we should be given summary judgment based on the fact that under Washington law, they had to look at this project. They're telling you they didn't. That's illegal, and we should get summary judgment. I guess just on the latter points, I do think we should be allowed to add the three claims, about the reliance on the DEIS, the incorporation by reference. We're not arguing those in the merits today, but the city did just tell us that they relied upon the DEIS. This is the first time anybody's heard of it. I think it's only fair to add those claims to the case.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Talgi. All right, yeah, I'll have to take a look at the nuances of the Clark County case there. I mean, I think summary judgment is kind of a high bar here in favor of the appellants. I think in general, I would agree that this specific project impacts need to be looked at, but when the level of the impacts, that's kind of the outstanding question here. I mean, if we're just talking about general traffic impacts and curricular impacts, that kind of stuff, that even at the upper level of review of the DIS, it may be encompassed in that, and that if the city can establish that even with the supportable housing project, it will be within the trip generation estimated by the DEIS, then you could argue that impact is covered. So I think granting the summary judgment motion is probably unlikely, but I'll have that decision out by the end of next week. So just to keep this moving along, then in the issue of discovery, I think that the appellants are entitled to just the latest project plans and design plans, any reports involved, and in order to keep going with our December 22nd hearing date, I'd ask the city just to get that to Mr. Telgen by December 5th. That gives them, I think it's like 10 days then before the witness and exhibit lists are due. If there are any other, if any other discovery is merited, I'll figure that out, by my ruling at the end of the next week. I mean, in terms of what the city considered, in putting its environmental review together, I think, a lot of that can come out at the hearing itself and also in the witness and exhibit list due a week in advance. And if there really is anything new that comes up, at the hearing itself, additional time can be allotted to respond to that. But I think, to the extent that what the city looked at before the hearing, to make their determination isn't the hyper details of that I don't think are really necessary, especially when it comes to the email exchanges, taking into account how much time is necessary, that kind of thing. I mean, there is the rule in the rules of procedure requiring extraordinary circumstances. I think that standard does have to be tempered, though, by the requirements of due process. I mean, it's kind of strange, but the issue of due process rights for discovery in local, city and county hearings hasn't been addressed in land use cases, but it's been addressed a couple times in dangerous dog appeal cases. And there, the courts have ruled that there's a due process right to subpoena records and subpoena witnesses. So, I've kind of taken that to mean that at the very least, participants in a land use hearing are entitled to what they would be entitled to in a records request. And a lot of times I'll just even ask, just make your records request and we won't hold the hearing until those documents come in. But, I have to weigh that against the city's compelling testimony that there's a lot of emails involved here. And I think that they're ultimately of marginal value. I think, when you get the project design specs and everything else, you have a pretty good understanding of what the impacts are. And then it's just an issue of, has it been covered in the documents that the city's relying upon? And like I said before, Mr. Telgen will know have a pretty good idea of what the city relied upon when it gets the witness and exhibit list. I think we already know at this point it's the DIS is what the city said it was relying upon. Beyond that, and this isn't an issue that has to be resolved by my ruling next week, but I think it's going to be an important issue in this case, and that is the city's characterization of the Friends of Sammamish case. I haven't had to make any rulings yet in any other permit hearing regarding how to apply this case, but I've done a couple of presentations on it, and I don't know if I'd have to say that at least right now, my understanding of the case is different than that of the city's. I mean, the city essentially is using the case to argue, well, if you look at what the regulations allow now and compare that to what the amendments do, the difference is very slight, so the impact is very minor. That's actually exactly the same argument that was used in the Friends of Sammamish case and thrown out by the court, where the King County argued that their spirit, what is it, their beer, wine, and brewery regulations were more restrictive than what was on the books at the time, because they were trying to control all this illegal activity, and therefore there wasn't any need for detailed legal analysis because they were actually improving on environmental conditions. And the court said, no, what you don't look at the existing regulations, you look at the condition of the land, and you look at what the law allows, what the law will allow to be developed given the way the land is currently developed. And that case is very badly worded. It's hard to figure out that's what they're actually saying, but if you read it over a few times, it appears to me that's ultimately where they get at. And so and the case has always concerned me because it kind of in an ultimate bad case scenario. I mean, it appears to what that court is saying is that if you, for example, have zoning that allows 10 units per acre, and you reduce it to 5 units per acre, you can't say, oh, the environmental conditions are improving because it's less density. What you have to do, according to this case, and I'm pretty sure that's what they were intending to say, is you look at the condition of the land right now, and then you look, several decades in the future to figure out what the, new development will be that's allowed under the 5 units per acre. So you could have, so instead of having 5,000 residences under the new zoning regulation, you just have 2,500 residences. But if there's zero right now, you have to look at the impacts of an additional 2,500 residences. So if that's how that case is to be applied, I'm not quite sure how you apply it in this particular case. It's going to be a challenge. I mean, there's been some federal case law that says that the most difficult part of NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, is figuring out and applying what the baseline is. And so that seems to be that might be an issue in this case. On the issue of whether the appellants can amend their appeal, I mean, I think Mr. Telgen's made a pretty good argument there that they didn't know the city relied on the DEIS, and therefore they should be allowed to address whether that was proper or not. But Mr. Somi, you want a chance to argue it? That's fair, since it just came up yesterday. So how much time do you need to put together an argument on that?
Let me think about this. Unfortunately, we'll need to toss that to a colleague. I leave tonight for out of country for a while. I would probably suspect about a week. I can find someone here to assist me. One of the nice things about working in a firm, so.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I guess I work by myself. I know. So, all right. So, because looking at that, because again, I think the ultimate issue is that Mr. Telgen has to put his witness on his list by the 15th, so he needs a ruling, in advance of that. But so, can we say maybe December 3rd then, and Mr. Telgen provides a response December 5th?
Hold a second.
Well, I will
Yeah.
note this, Mr. Telgen. I thought the hearing, I thought the December 22nd date was that. I thought we were talking about a December 17th date.
Well, I have I mean, the pre-hearing order I have, or the draft anyway, is still has the 22nd. Did we change that to the 17th for some reason? I
Well,
guess I'll have
there have
to.
been a lot of there have been a lot of discussion, and I think the 22nd was not going to work on my end, and I thought Mr. Soeming also didn't like it, and so we had talked about the 17th. And
All
so
right. So.
part of I've confirmed the 17th will work on my end. I don't know about the 22nd.
Did we? So I guess did we alter the witness and exhibit
Yeah.
list or?
Yeah. So my understanding is that we were set for the 17th as well, but I
Okay.
do
All right.
understand
In my
that
mind. Yeah,
the
no mistake.
pre-hearing order said the 22nd. There's been a lot of emails back and forth about availability. Everyone's schedule's complicated.
Right.
So my hope was to achieve at least in part today a better understanding of our case deadlines.
Okay. Let's do that then.
Because
Let's see.
I had it as December 17th at 9 a.m. as the hearing on the merits, and then if I logically backed up, I had December 15th as rebuttal lists and December 10th as initial lists.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess the challenge there is, like I said, I think that, at the minimum, the discovery is going to be those reports given to Mr. Telgen, and that would be by the 5th, I said. So that just gives him 5 days to put his witness exhibit list. I mean, Mr. Soman, do you know, has the project design changed very much from the documents that Mr. Telgen shared today?
Unfortunately, I don't know, but I'm going to do the highly unusual move and ask Ms. Sutton, who is on the call. She's the subject matter expert on that. Ms. Sutton, do you happen to know?
I haven't heard anything about the project changing since the materials that were produced for the September 11th Planning Commission meeting for the public participation meeting for the 625 project. That was done
Right.
during the pre-application phase. As you mentioned, we have not received a land use application for this project.
And Ms. Sutton,
Thank you.
would it be difficult for the city to get the drawings and the reports done? I don't know, either put them on the web or, send some kind of
Well,
a Dropbox to Mr. Telgen, library.
the traffic study that Mr. Telegan referred to is already on the 625 project website. It's hyperlinked. There's a FAQ on the project website, and if you click on each topic, there's additional information. And one of those is the traffic study that was completed. So we can ask the executive department is the lead staff that is coordinating with Low Income Housing Institute. So we could ask them if anything has changed since the material already available in this September 11th Planning Commission packet.
So it sounds like September 11th is likely the most recent iteration, but we can verify, Mr.
Okay.
Olbrechts.
So can we get any updated project drawings and reports to Mr. Telgen by the 3rd of December?
I think that should certainly be
Okay.
doable. So I'm just taking notes for my own edification. So December 3rd, city needs to provide a response to Mr. Telekin's request to add claims. To be clear, Mr. Olbrechts, I don't know if the city's response would be any sort of formal pleading. I think just to be honest, this is just something that was relatively last minute, and I think we owe it to our client to at least look into this issue,
Sure. Okay.
at the very least. So it may just come in the form of an email. And then on December 3rd, to clarify, you would like the city to provide the latest plans, drawings, and reports on the 65 project. Is that right?
Right. That's it. Yeah. The
Okay.
critical area reports, the traffic reports, of course, being the most important in project drawings. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me take note of
Yeah,
that.
and I would just say on the website right now, it lists there being a revised preliminary master plan presented on August 19th, 2025, and there's no hyperlink on the city's website for that.
Well, the city council agenda page has all the city council. That was in a city council meeting, and that information is in that city council packet.
I looked there and that wasn't clear to me, Ms. Sutton.
Oh, well, if you click on city council agendas, which from the home page is on the right-hand side of the page, that gives you, you can scroll down to see links to past city council agendas
I'm
going
aware
back
of how to use
years.
this. I am aware of how to use that portion of the city's website.
Yeah.
I've looked at that. I'm just saying
Yeah.
it wasn't clear to me. So I was just calling this to Mr. Soaming's attention as one of the things I'm
Yes.
curious about. So if there are revised plans, I would appreciate those being sent
Yeah.
to me.
And I'll be sure to make sure that we send these so that way everyone's on the same proverbial page. So,
Okay. All right. So
okay.
that discovery anyway is due Wednesday. Like I said, I'll look further into whether any other discovery is merited, but I think that's probably going to be the main discovery required. So I think
Okay.
we got our dates, and then so Mr. Selman,
Okay.
you're going to provide your response next Wednesday as well, Mr. Telgen by Friday on amending the appeal. And beyond that, we've got 12:10 the witness and exhibit list due, 12:15 the rebuttal list due, 12:17 the hearing itself.
And then, Mr. Olbrechts, I always hesitate to ask because I feel like I'm applying undue pressure. When do you expect to provide a decision on this? I mean, obviously, a decision on this could drastically alter the party's preparations.
Yeah, like I
So
said,
I
that's the end of next week. I mean, I have to
end of
start
next
on a
week, got it.
600 page transcript tomorrow, and I'll be working all day Thanksgiving, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday on that decision. So I won't have
Understood.
time to even get started on this one until
Understood.
Wednesday. So
Okay.
yeah, you
All
can
right.
all enjoy your Thanksgiving. I'll be working, but so
All right.
that's fine.
Well, we appreciate it, Mr. Olbrechts. And like I mentioned, I will be unfortunately out of town for quite some time, but I will leave this in the capable hands of Mr. Haney. And I will be working as best I can too on my time
All
off.
right,
So.
sounds good. Okay. Well, everyone, yeah, have a great Thanksgiving and good arguments today. Oh, what
And
else?
then I'm sorry, I would be remiss if I did not mention Mr. Telligan's point about burden of proof. I would like to correct myself that he is in fact correct. I apologize. Little sleep. So I withdraw my argument that is based on that line of argument.
Okay, got it,
Thank you.
got it. Yeah, I kind of, yeah, I wondered about that one. So,
Yes.
all
Yeah.
right, thanks,
We're
Mr.
all
Stone.
learning something. Thank you very
Yeah, that's
much.
right. Yeah. All right. Thank you,
Okay.
everybody. Good
I
night.
think he was.
Farewell.
I think he was right. I think he was right.
Well,
So
it's
I
not
guess
good
we'll
to
leave it
go
there.
down that path, but
All
we'll.
right. Thank you very
Okay.
much.
Yeah. I'll see you
Goodbye.
soon. Bye-bye.